Wow. Paula, where is she? I just want to give credit where credit's due. Paula, every single time you do a video, it's art. It's fantastic. And Lewis, I don't know where you are, Lewis. He helped create the poster this time, and just fantastic. We have so much talent in this room, and so exciting. Anyways, welcome. Welcome to OC Grace, first service of the day, where we want to learn to be... Yes. We go from like 5 people knowing it to 20 people to 30 people. It's very exciting. We want to learn to be an authentic expression of the kingdom of heaven. That's our vision. That's our goal. And it's fantastic. It follows the teachings of Jesus and his gospel. Learn to be that authentic expression. And so today, if you're new, if you're a visitor, welcome. I hope you feel at home. Hope you got a gift bag. You got one of our little coffee cups. That's good. Did you guys get those? You got it. Good. Okay. We're treating you well. We are moving into this new series, Exodus, as you just saw. And Exodus is one of these beautiful narratives in the Bible. It is just filled with so much beauty, so much texture, very complex. It's a beautiful book. And so what we're going to do in this whole series of Exodus is we're going to look at the original meaning of the book, why it was written, to who it was written. We're going to look at some of the culture, the traditions of the past, these ancient people. And when you do that, and you do the responsible hard work, then you can begin to apply these concepts and these themes to today. So what you'll see with this ancient people who are describing this epic story of the Exodus is you have Moses. And Moses, he's a character that, watch this now, Moses has to go through a time where he is in captivity. Moses will then go into the wilderness and he will learn and unlearn certain things. He'll become aware of God, the divine. And then after experiencing this, he will learn to walk in the new reality. He will then go back and bring his people into this new journey. And so what you have in Exodus is really two stories, but it's the same story. Moses is Israel miniaturized. So you see the story of Moses, then you see the story of Israel. And it's all about learning how to walk in the new reality. Is walking the Christian life easy for you? If you just raise your hand, you're a filthy liar. It's not. It's a stumbling, fumbling journey. And we're all on it. And so I hope you are blessed by this series. Now, my family and I, we just got back from the Mitten State. You know you're from Michigan when you describe certain places by looking at your palm. We live in Grand Rapids. Oh, it's right there. We haven't been home. I haven't been home in like 6.5 years. And so I brought my family with me and we went home. And when we got home, they met cousins they've never met before. They met awkward Uncle Ralph. He's the crazy one in the family who I just love Uncle Ralph. They got to meet him. My kids, again, people from Southern California, this will blow your mind. My kids ran in the woods barefoot. Yeah. I know. It's weird. I was like, don't do that. And I thought, do that. Like, do that. The air. I didn't have a gas mask when I was breathing. No, this is paradise. There's a reason we pay for paradise here. But it was nice to be back in Michigan to see all of that. And my kids just thrived. And so my wife and I decided we want to go to the camp that we first met. It was that moment when we were teenagers when my wife saw me and she was like, I can't live without that man. Obviously, our stories might be a little different in the way we perceive it. But we decided to go back to that camp where we first met. And I remember meeting her. I was doing dishes, and so we kind of got a picture by where the dishes were and where the bench was where I was blowing leaves into her face trying to talk to her. As a teenager, I didn't know to turn it off. How are you? You're beautiful. I'm what? We had to do that. Oh, it was just fantastic. Going home, many of you know, it just brings us so much beauty. It's so much fun. But I also noticed there are some things that are There's a potential darkness to going home, too. You go home, and you try to sleep in that single bed. This doesn't quite fit anymore. The room isn't quite as big as it used to at your parents' house, right? There's some things that you may have outgrown certain ideologies. You may even have gone from a donkey to an elephant or vice versa. I don't know. You may have changed your perspective on economics, religion, politics, whatever it is. So when you go back home, you may or may not find yourself biting your tongue sometimes in conversation. And I remember I did that a couple times. I heard people talk about the important issues of not allowing drums on a stage. I sat around a campfire and I listened to people talk about those crazy liberal Californians. Oh, I bit my tongue a lot. But I have to tell you, it was really interesting. But there was this pastor who spoke, and I have to tell you, the stuff he said, it was really good. There was some really good stuff he said. But there were a couple things I just kind of, you know, I cringed a little bit. First off, I have some triggers. He looks like a guy that, you know, military dad, the buzz cut. And I remember him talking. He loved to reference that he makes his bed every single day. And he did that. He seemed to insert that into every sermon. And I kind of thought that was funny. And he reminded me, and again, this is just me, and I'm my own kind of weird, but he reminded me of the kind of dad you'd walk into the kitchen and the kids are attending before having their meal. They're waiting there. You may sit. You know, wife is very patriarchal. It's a very patriarchal system. She should be there in the kitchen making food, washing the kids. I should be at my job. A lot of it, I was kind of like, arr. And I did that periodically. But there was one theme that I just struggled to get past, even though there was so much goodness to the messages. There was one theme, and it went like this. The world is getting worse and worse and worse. The world is going to hell in a handbasket. And that phrase over and over and over again was said. And the crazy thing to me was, I remember feeling and hearing people say, amen! Think about that. Amen, the world's going to hell in a handbasket. Amen, things are getting worse. Is that something to amen about, first of all? So I found myself at odds a little bit and struggling. And my wife is like kicking me. Tell me, shut up. Just enjoy it. Like, do you have to analyze everything? I'm like, kind of. You still love me, right? And let's be honest. Going to hell in a handbasket, the idea the world is getting worse is very easy to see based on what our media shares, isn't it? There's Brexit, there's violence all over, there's other countries trying to have weapons of mass destruction. They're following suit, of course, right? We have all of these different things. We elected a very controversial president, and whether you're this or that, it's been very divisive. And so we have all of these things going on, and many people have said over and over again, the world, this nation, it's going to hell in a handbasket. And for many of us, we grew up with this narrative, didn't we? I remember sitting at my grandma's feet, and she'd say, oh, Tony, don't worry about going to college. The world's going to end soon. It's going to burn. And she'd say it with a smile. I'd be like, wait, what? Why are you smiling? Don't worry about college. Well, I can see burning my books. Yeah, okay, burn those books. But I remember this kind of odd thing, because Christians are taught the message of Jesus is to restore, repair, to heal. And yet we also have this interesting narrative that says it's going to all be destroyed and burn and burn and burn and go to hell in the handbasket. What do you do? There's a lot of cognitive dissonance there. What do you do? I want to pose a question to you. What if our narrative was the world is heading in a positive direction? What would we do with all of our graphs and decoder rings if that was the case? What would we do with this idea that we are inherently bad and evil? What would we do if the world is actually heading in a positive direction? If the message of Jesus, and let's pretend for a minute, if the message of Jesus was truly what it was, and it was true that those things he said actually had the potential to change the world for the better, if that came true, what would it do to your faith? Your understanding of yourself, of God, what would it do to you? Let me share some statistics I find interesting. And by the way, this is only 10. There were thousands of them, but I only had so much time. So let me share a couple interesting statistics with you. Violence is actually decreasing according to the Uniform Crime Report, which I'll include, I can include later in some things. But while the fear of violence is being perpetuated by our media, the actual violence globally is decreasing. Is that interesting to anybody? By the way, as a speaker, you know you're getting people to think when they're all doing this. I'm feeling good. Let me give you more. Extreme poverty has decreased below 10% in the U.S., and there's a global trend that's following that. In some places, someone might say amen to things like that, by the way. I'm just saying. Like, what I just shared is actually good news, and you look like we're at a funeral. Warning bells should go off in your head if you're not celebrating those things. Just an observation. Over 1 billion people worldwide are out of poverty. They've moved away from extreme poverty. That's really good news. Global carbon emissions failed to rise for the third time in the last 3 years. Why? Because people have understood that we have an impact on this blue orb that's rotating around in the universe. We have an impact, and we're changing the way we navigate in it. The death penalty, watch this one. The death penalty has been ruled illegal in more than half of the countries around the world, which tells me this. We are moving away from vengeful justice, where it's eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. We're moving away from that as a human being, as a human group, moving away from that, mankind. We're moving away from that kind of justice into restorative justice. Now, is it perfect? No. There's a lot of room for growth. We have a lot of improvements we can make, but we're heading in a different direction. Let me give you more. The decline in authoritarian dictators and more in favor of democracy. This has been an interesting one. And again, you've been following our politics here in America. More and more people are saying, I think democracy is actually a good idea. And they're moving toward that. Is it perfect? No. Are we moving in a better direction because of it? Many would argue, yes, we're seeing what works, what doesn't work. Democracy is still in its infancy stages, and we're trying to figure it out. And we have better ideas of where to go and where not to go. Let me give you more. This comes from my children. Giant pandas no longer are endangered. I love, okay. Pandas! Finally! World hunger, big deal. But pandas, something to be excited about. Pandas, yes. They're cute. They're cuddly. I get it. Child mortality has been cut in half since 1990. 300,000 more people have electricity and water each day. That's really, really exciting. These are interesting times we're in. And again, I chose 10 statistics out of the thousands I could have chosen. The world could potentially be heading in some really restorative directions, couldn't it? Let me ask you this. Who profits most from the gloom and doom fire narrative? Who profits most from that? Does society get better with that narrative? Think about this. The people you're around that you like are not the people that are like, it's all garbage. How are you doing today? Terrible. Why? I'm inherently sinful and bad, and I'll always choose the wrong direction when given the choice. Okay. You don't like to hang around with those people. Why? Because all they talk about is death and destruction. That seems to be the only thing that they're focused on. And that doesn't bring life. What happens when a church, a tribe, what happens when that's their narrative? And the rest of the world is saying, we want to repair this thing. What happens to religion when it becomes that narrative? I would argue it slowly finds itself less and less and less interesting and compelling. The people who profit most from that narrative is not us. It's not society. It's not mankind. It is those powers that seek to oppress by using fear, by using certain narratives from the media. Sometimes churches have even used that narrative. Fear, guilt, shame. Those narratives will do nothing but bring humanity closer and closer to a gloom and doom destruction. However, the narrative of Jesus, the messages Jesus shares 99% of the time, they look like this. Verily, truly, I tell you, whoever believes in me will do what? But you don't believe that. You will do greater things, greater works than I have been doing. And they will be even greater things than these. I believe you can be a Christian today and not actually follow or believe the teachings of Jesus. Over and over again, Jesus has a very high view of humanity. And yet, oftentimes we share a very negative, pessimistic view of the world. Who are we aligning ourselves with those narratives, those pessimistic ones? I would argue it's not Jesus. The narrative of Jesus, the message over and over again, is this kingdom reality. This gospel message, the proclamation of a new reality, has to happen now. And when it does, why would the world get worse? I want you to consider that for a moment. Why would our message be it gets worse? Wouldn't our message be that this thing actually has the potential to shift everything? To make things better? Ever have someone try to sell you something that they're not doing themselves? How'd that work out? Hey, I've got this great diet pill, says Tony with a muffin top. My life! Or take this thing or take these classes. It'll change your perspective on life, says Eeyore. We have to shift the conversation, don't we? The perspective has to change. Our message actually is a really beautiful, compelling, powerful one of change and restoration. So how do we get there? How do we leave the pessimism of the past and walk in a new optimistic life? I got reminded of this from a friend of mine at camp. Now, I used to listen to tapes, like tape cassettes. How many of you remember tape cassettes? Yeah. This was before even like the CD, which is now ancient. It's obsolete. Yeah. But there was this guy in Michigan. He was my favorite artist. And I loved this guy. He's so good. When I look back now, some of the songs, you know, I was young. Hear Kitty Kitty talking about Daniel and the Lion's Den. A little cheesy. But I remember loving this stuff. And so I followed Buddy Hotelling and his music. And so I remember we got to open for Buddy Hotelling. In Battle Creek, Michigan, where drums are of the devil, it is the great controversy. Right there. And so I remember we played and he brought up this old yearbook and he said, times are changing. And we used to be like these young people. We had a different kind of form of art and expression. And it's time we embrace these people too, like we wanted to be embraced. And I felt like someone stood up for me for the first time with music. And so I had a chance to talk to Buddy, and he remembered me. He said really nice things about me, and I hugged him, and he's kind of like, okay. Probably a little too long, too much shoulder rub. He was probably very uncomfortable. But then he said, you guys could have made it. You were so good, blah, blah, blah. We were going back and forth, and I felt so good. And then throughout the week, I started talking to him. And then after the positive stuff, some of the frustrations about the week came out. And Buddy looked at me, and he said something really profound, something that fits with Israel to a T there in captivity. He said, I know you're frustrated about some things, but here's the advice I would give you. Stop. Breathe and let Camp Asabel speak. That's the camp I was at. You're like, where do I find this Camp Asabel? Is it a water? What do I do? Stop. Breathe. Let Camp Asabel speak. Let God speak. And it hit me. Israel was in this place. And we're told in the first chapter that Israel as a nation, they are pushed downward. The idea is about physical proximity. It's where your eyes are heading. And so the slave masters, they were forcing labor over them. The idea here is when you are stuck looking down, what begins to be your focus? All you see is mud and the dirt and the grime. How many of you have been or are in a place right now where all you can see is the negative, the painful, the brokenness? Maybe you've been in these places before. You forget about the beautiful community, about God. You forget about all of these beautiful things around you because your focus is there on that one problem that's now become your whole world. Israel is looking down. They are forced down. Be very careful of the messages, the mass media, that other places give you where their focus is nothing but this, this, this. It has a very real tendency to make really good slaves of people. And this is what's happening for Israel. But we're told this. Hosea, one of my favorite prophetic voices, says, when Israel was a child, I loved him. And out of Egypt, I called my son. And the words here are kind of interesting because, again, proximity. For the Hebrews, the idea of kingdom of heaven, it was this. It was looking from there to all around you. It's looking up and being aware of the beauty, the love, the community that is there all around you. For some of us, in the middle of our brokenness and our pain, in the middle of that thing that you just can't seem to get away from, that thing that's got all of your attention, sometimes moving away from slavery, all it takes is simply stopping, breathing, and looking up again. Stop, breathe, look up. Some of us, we need to stop. Some of us need to stop. And here's what I mean by that. Some of us need to turn off Fox, NBC, CBS, whatever that news source is that's giving you this over and over and over again. Some of us need to stop and just turn it off. The things that are promoting nothing but negative, mucky, dirty, slavery, take time to just turn it off. There's some relationships with people you have that are bringing nothing but destruction, despair. Those people need help, but so do you. Find some time to distance yourself and be around the people who bring life once again. Stop for a moment. Another thing I might recommend is this. Take time to breathe. Do you know that Sabbath is actually a blessing? It's actually a gift. It's a day where you stop and you remember that you were not made for slavery. So maybe after you stop, take time to breathe and take that cell phone maybe And just put it in the front room where it's away from family and friends and community, and be fully present with the people you love. Maybe get off of Facebook. I got to be honest with you. The world will continue revolving even though we didn't know what you ate for lunch. It will. Give it a try. I promise you it'll shock you. You're like, what? The pizza was so good. It was fire baked. Stop and breathe. Remind yourself you're not a slave. And then lastly, after you stopped and after you've taken time to breathe again, look up. Because Israel's journey away from slavery, it starts with something very simple. It starts with a motion that looks like this to this. It starts with a motion from this to knowing nothing but slavery to looking up and being aware of the freedom and the goodness, God's presence all around them. It took the simple motion to start their journey of leaving the past behind by first looking up. Look up. And if you look up, when you look around you, you might just find that the world is ripe with goodness. The world is actually heading on a trajectory that Jesus put us on. And the Christian journey is not about a rescue or an escape. The Christian journey is about an invitation to a banquet. And Jesus said, the banquet starts here. Join me, prodigals, in the banquet that's placed before you right here, right now. For some of us, we've been so afraid as the eldest, standing at a distance from the banquet. And we've been stuck in the mud for far too long. Jesus has been calling us, step out of the muck and the mire. Step away from those narratives of gloom and doom and step into the celebration. And when you step into the celebration, you begin experiencing life to its fullest. And when you experience life to its fullest, now you have something to share. Now you have something to share. My blessing, my prayer for you today is that you today might stop. You might take time to breathe again. And you might allow the God of the universe, the divine, to speak life into you once again. May God bless you today.